where there used to be Rohingya homes and markets and mosques, the authorities have now bulldozed them.
If Rohingya want to return to Myanmar, their homes might be gone. This is Tuesday, March 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. You are part of this program, so join us, please, on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, as events on the political and diplomatic fronts accelerate, the UN worries about human rights being left behind. While Chinese leaders clear the way for lifetime leadership for their president, voices of concern continue to grow. And we'll tell you the story of a female boxing coach in Pakistan, all on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's Rakhine State is being militarized at an alarming pace as authorities are building security force bases and bulldozing land where Rohingya villages were burned to the ground just months ago. That is the headline from the latest briefing from the rights group Amnesty International. Joining us from Washington is Amnesty International Senior Crisis Advisor Matt Wells. Matt, thanks for being with us. Tell us all about the report.
Just over 6 months ago, the Myanmar military launched a devastating campaign against the Rohingya population in northern Rakhine State, driving more than 670,000 men, women, and children across the border into Bangladesh. And what our new report shows is, as those refugees, you know, shelter in Bangladesh, the Myanmar authorities are in effect remaking Rakhine State in their absence. Where there used to be Rohingya homes and markets and mosques, the authorities have now bulldozed them. They've cleared away vegetation and farmland. And in their place, what we're seeing on satellite imagery and confirmed by interviews that we've done is that the authorities have built new security force bases, new roads and other infrastructure really directly on top of where villages used to be.
So how does this fall in line with the plans to repatriate thousands and thousands of Rohingya from Bangladesh back to their homes in Myanmar?
What we're seeing really, you know, directly contradicts what the Myanmar government has been saying. Publicly, it says that it is ready to start repatriating, you know, refugees that are in Bangladesh. But the reality is that, you know, they're often building on top of these former villages. They're putting up new security force bases across Rakhine State. And of course, these are the same security forces that carried out widespread killing, sexual violence against Rohingya women and girls, and burned hundreds of villages across this area. And so the idea that people are going to feel comfortable returning with an even more militarized presence, it's hard to believe. And again, it's actually impossible now for people to return to some of these villages because the authorities are now, you know, building on top of what used to be homes and markets.
Where are they saying anyone who wants to be repatriated back to Myanmar will be living?
They've indicated that they, in fact, committed in their arrangements with the Bangladeshi government that people will be able to return to their original places of residence. And yet we see big new border guard police bases on top of former Rohingya villages. And in some areas, you know, people had tried to stay for months, even during the worst violence. And this new construction is, in fact, driving more people away to Bangladesh. There's a village known as Ale Chung. And when I was in Bangladesh last month, I interviewed a handful of people who had just fled that village. And the reason why they fled is because the border guard police had marked off a huge stretch of land that used to be Rohingya farmland and told people they could no longer go out to their farms. They could no longer produce rice because they were building a new base. And so as people were being driven to starvation, they were increasingly forced to flee to Bangladesh. Another thing here is that the campaign of ethnic cleansing is not yet even over.
How were you able to get access to these areas and see what was going on?
Through satellite imagery combined with testimonies of people who have recently fled to Bangladesh, as well as, you know, we maintain contact with people who are still in northern Rakhine State. And we piece all of this together, and it presents a very clear picture of what's happening, that the Rohingya are still being driven to Bangladesh, and that in places where they have been driven away, the authorities are reshaping Rakhine State in a really concerning way. And that, you know, a lot of what we're seeing will only further entrench the systemic discrimination and segregation of the Rohingya population, which really has underpinned so much of the persecution of the Rohingya group.
What would you like to see happen?
You know, we've seen countries around the world issue statements of concern, you know, even condemnations, but there has yet to be real consequences for the Myanmar military, despite clear indication of crimes against humanity over the last 6 months. We need to see an arms embargo on Myanmar. We need to see targeted financial sanctions on senior officials who have led this campaign of violence against the Rohingya. And we need to see efforts to begin collecting and storing evidence and support for future criminal accountability mechanisms. The military in Myanmar has operated with impunity for far too long, and it's why we see this round of abuses that keeps going. And it's not just in Rakhine State against the Rohingya. We're also seeing it right now in other parts of the country against other ethnic minorities. And so it's essential that right now countries show, you know, send a clear message to the Myanmar military that this sort of continued persecution, these continued atrocities cannot be allowed to stand, and that ultimately one day they will face prosecution in court.
Matt Wells is the Senior Crisis Advisor for Amnesty International. Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there is another side to this story. Myanmar government spokesman Zaatai told the Associated Press that the bulldozing is mainly to prepare burned areas for resettlement and reconstruction, and only covers areas where structures that had already been burned down. The government has denied burning down villages to drive out the Rohingya. Meanwhile, a United Nations investigator said Monday the Myanmar government appears to be pursuing a policy of starvation in Rakhine State to force out the remaining Muslim Rohingya population. Special Rapporteur Yang Hee Lee told the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva that atrocities against the Rohingya Muslim minority bear the hallmarks of genocide. She called for the council to set up an entity in Bangladesh where more than 650,000 Rohingya have fled to collect evidence for potential trials. You are invited to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, on VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. A top airport official in Nepal says the plane that crashed as it landed in that country's capital killed 49 people and approached the airport's only runway from the wrong direction. The U.S. says it will not impose more conditions on North Korea before a summit of the two nations' leaders beyond the North's promise not to resume nuclear and missile testing or publicly criticize U.S.-South Korean military exercises. South Korea's National Security Director Monday praised Chinese President Xi Jinping's role in nudging North Korea toward denuclearization talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. The U.S. said Monday it has yet to hear back from North Korea in the days since President Trump agreed to meet in person with Pyongyang's reclusive leader, Kim Jong-un. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, on a visit to Nigeria, said the U.S. expects to hear something directly from North Korea, but he seemed unconcerned that there has been no immediate public response to Trump's acceptance of Kim's invitation for a face-to-face meeting over possible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and other issues. He declined to float any ideas for where the summit might occur, saying, "I think it's going to be very important that those kinds of conversations are held quietly through the two parties." Separately, U.S. lawmakers stressed the need for exhaustive preparations and consultations involving U.S. and North Korean officials ahead of a Trump-Kim encounter. Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake said a meeting like that is not useful and, in fact, could be counterproductive unless proper preparation is done, which would involve a series of meetings by diplomats. U.S. officials vowed Sunday they would not make any concessions to North Korea ahead of the summit and would continue to pressure North Korea. As the political tensions on the Korean Peninsula appear to be easing, the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea warns human rights must not be held hostage to security concerns. The rapporteur, who presented his report to the UN Human Rights Council, says conditions in North Korea are dire and must remain a priority. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Council in Geneva.
Special Rapporteur Tomas Ojeda Quintana acknowledges what appears to be a potential for rapid progress on the political and security front. He says communication channels are building up between the two Koreas as well as the United States with a potentially historic summit in the future. While he commends the governments and initiatives for making this possible, he counsels caution.
Rapprochement cannot be a single-track process focused only on security, for there is no long-term peace and security in a climate of impunity and disregard for human rights. The two projects must complement each other, and we must move forward on both fronts.
Quintana's report presents a blistering picture of a society that runs a cruel penitentiary system that represses all forms of free expression, continues to nurture fear of the state, and leaves people at the mercy of public officials who are not held accountable for their actions. He has harsh words for China's policy of forcibly repatriating citizens of North Korea, including children. He urges China to stop deporting North Korean nationals who, he says, risk torture upon their return. Quintana is calling on the government of Kim Jong-un to release six nationals of South Korea and three U.S. citizens who remain in detention in the DPRK on charges of plotting hostile acts against the state. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Let's get caught up on what's happening now in Asia. Officials in Nepal say a passenger plane from Bangladesh crashed and burst into flames as it was landing at the Kathmandu airport, killing at least 49 people. Iran is accusing the United States of helping Islamic State militants in Afghanistan fuel regional terrorism and threaten neighboring countries. Islamic Pakistan has sworn in newly elected members of its Senate, including the first female representative from that country's marginalized Hindu community. Stay up to date with the VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you are with us. Chinese state-run media Monday defended the 13th National People's Congress in an overwhelming vote Sunday to end presidential term limits, paving the way toward indefinite rule for Xi Jinping, who has embarked on his second term. The Global Times expressed confidence that the key to China's path lies in upholding strong party leadership and firmly following the leadership of the Party Central Committee with Comrade Xi Jinping at the core. That's what it said. The China Daily opined the change does not mean a lifelong term for leading officials. It said it's vital to expedite structural reforms and intensify the fight against corruption. The vote was overwhelming to lift the 2 5-year term limit put in the Constitution in 1982. In fact, there were only 2 no votes and 3 abstentions out of nearly 3,000 delegates. University of Chicago political science professor Dali Yang told VOA's Victor Beatty he was not surprised by the outcome.
The lopsidedness is not surprising, although I'm still amazed about the small number of no votes, actually, were cast. Of course, the constitutional amendments were far more than the elimination of the two-term limits. They included a variety of other things. But, of course, you can see that the Congress, the People's Congress of China, are packed with loyalists to the Communist Party, essentially. And, of course, on such occasions, they show up in force.
In the run-up to the vote, critics on the Chinese social media platforms attacked the move, drawing parallels to North Korea or suggesting a Mao-type cult of personality.
There is a felt, very keenly, that the system and also the authorities have tightened control over the media in particular, in anticipation of criticism, in fact, to forestall any criticism. So in that sense, actually, it's sort of that only fuels further complaints from people who are unhappy with some of the changes.
Asia Society China scholar Orville Schell, who first visited China in 1975, said there was a sense then that China was trying to become more democratic. With this move by Mr. Xi, he said there is no longer the pretension that China is becoming more open and democratic. And former U.S. officials Kurt Campbell and Eli Ratner said the move has dashed even modest hopes for political liberalization. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is a news alert from VOA Asia. Vietnam and the United Nations will build storm-proof housing for coastal communities there. The Taliban attacks on Afghan soldiers kill at least 24 people before they had retreated. The Hong Kong pro-democracy camp suffers an election setback. And police investigate the latest anti-Muslim attack in Sri Lanka. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. What is most likely one of the most unusual things you might think about? How about a boxing coach? No? Boxing teacher? No, that's not unusual. No, well, what if it's in Pakistan? And what about if it's a woman?
Meet Shehnaz Kamal. Typical Pashtun woman in many ways, except for one. She loves to fight. Formerly a professional boxer, she's the only female coach registered with the Pakistan Boxing Federation.
My husband taught me as is a student. He showed me how to box. Before I came into this profession as a coach, I was a trained boxer. I learned boxing for 2 years. My husband gave me all my training. After that, I gave all my exams and got my students ready. And mashallah, we were successful in every boxing event we attended.
Shehnaz is the country's only female international boxing coach. Assisted by her brothers and her husband, Kamal roams the countryside in an old car equipped with a portable boxing ring, teaching young boys and girls the techniques of boxing.
We were the first in Pakistan's history to get females into boxing. We started the first training camp in Peshawar. It is a matter of pride for Peshawar. After the training camp, our girls won medals. One was from KP and one from Multan. We trained them and they received bronze medals at the South Asian Games for Pakistan.
Despite traditional misgivings in Pakistan about women in boxing, Kamal's husband, Saeed Kamal Khan, is proud of his wife's accomplishments. He says he couldn't care less about what people think.
My own wife boxes and coaches boxing. This is a good path. Sports is a good path. It's the best. We are on a positive path. Alhamdulillah. We're not on a negative path. There's no shame in it or feeling bad about it. Nor do we care what other people think.
The Kamals are disappointed with the lack of government support for women in sports, but their shared love for the sport keeps them going.
If I had a say, I would train all girls in boxing for self-defense. Our society deals with a lot of problems concerning women. I'm not sure why parents think that girls should not box.
The Kamals say boxing is not going to make them rich, but they believe young girls should have as many opportunities open to them as boys. And they say that mission, God willing, makes them happy. For producer Hamidullah in Peshawar, I'm Nyla Mohammed, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Japan is pledging to pay for nuclear inspections in North Korea in a bid to help end its atomic program.
At least 7 people are dead in a suicide bomb blast at a security checkpoint in the Afghan capital. At least 49 die, 23 are injured as a Bangladesh plane crashes in Nepal. The Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's political future is in doubt as his wife is linked to a cronyism scandal. North Korea's state media has given no public response to U.S. President Trump's acceptance of the proposal of a summit from leader Kim Jong-un. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, an Indonesian university whose ban on niqab face veils made global headlines has reversed that policy following criticism that it trampled on personal choice. The State Islamic University in Indonesia's cultural capital issued the edict last week after more than 36 niqab-wearing students and warned they could be expelled for non-compliance. The school, which has about 10,000 students, had said the now-canceled rule was aimed at countering religious extremism in this world's biggest Muslim-majority country. Artificial intelligence is on the cusp of transforming our world in ways many of us can barely imagine. There is much excitement about emerging technologies, but as Henry Ridgewell reports from London, a new report by 26 of the world's leading AI researchers warns of the potential dangers that could emerge over the coming decade as AI systems begin to surpass levels of human performance.
Artificial intelligence has the power to change society. This algorithm is able to detect terrorist propaganda online with a 94% success rate, perhaps a vital tool in countering radicalization. Despite positive breakthroughs, there are potential dangers with AI, according to a new report. Automated hacking is identified as one of the most imminent applications of AI, especially so-called phishing attacks.
So you can model someone's topics of interest or preferences, their writing style of a close friend, and have a machine automatically create a message that looks a lot like something they would click on.
It's been less than a week.
Programmers from the University of Washington last year built an AI algorithm to create a fake video of Barack Obama, allowing them to put any words into the former president's mouth.
You create videos and audio recordings that are pixel to pixel indistinguishable from real videos and real audio of people.
There is much excitement over self-driving AI cars, with big tech companies alongside giant car makers vying to be the first to market. But there are downsides too.
You can have a car that is as good or better at navigating the world than your average driver, but you put some stickers on a stop sign and it thinks it's a, you know, go at 55 miles per hour. As long as we haven't fixed that problem, we might have systems that are very safe, but are not secure.
AI use in warfare is widely seen as one of the most disturbing possibilities, with so-called killer robots and decision-making taken out of the hands of humans.
You want to have an edge over your opponent by deploying lots and lots of sensors, lots and lots of small robotic systems, all of them giving you terabytes of information about what's happening on the battlefield. And no human would be in a position to aggregate that information, so you would start having decision recommendation systems. At this point, do you still have meaningful human control?
There is also the danger of AI being used in mass surveillance, especially by oppressive regimes. The report authors stress the many positive applications of AI, but they hope many of the potential dangers can be preempted and say AI itself will likely provide many of the solutions. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks, as always, to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Dave Magnus, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.